They were all around this table, dozens of them, maybe hundreds. I hope they eat the hound. She remembers what he'd said about wolves and dogs. Come morning, Septon Utt still swung beneath the tree, but the Brown brothers were out in the rain with spades, digging shallow graves for the other dead. Lord Berwick thanked them for the night's lodging and the meal, and gave them a bag of silver stags to help rebuild. Harwin, likely Luke, and Watty the miller went out scouting, but neither wolves nor hounds were found. As Arya was cinching her saddle girth, Gendry came up to say that he was sorry. She put a foot in the stirrup and swung up into her saddle, so she could look down on him instead of up. "You could have made swords at River Run for my brother," she thought. But what she said was, "If you want to be some stupid outlaw knight and get hanged, why should I care? I'll be at River Run, ransomed, with my brother." There was no rain that day, thankfully, and for once they made good time.
Catelyn. 2 days' ride from River Run, a scout spied them watering their horses beside a muddy stream. Catelyn had never been so glad to see the twin tower badge of House Frey. When she asked him to lead them to her uncle, he said,
"The Blackfish is gone west with the king, my lady. Martin Rivers commands the outriders in his stead."
"I see." She had met Rivers at the Twins, a base-born son of Lord Walder Frey, half-brother to Sir Perrin. It did not surprise her to learn that Rob had struck at the heart of Lannister power. Clearly he had been contemplating just that when he sent her away to treat with Renly. "Where is Rivers now?"
"His camp is 2 hours' ride, my lady."
"Take us to him," she commanded. Bryeen helped her back into her saddle, and they set out at once.
"Have you come from Bitterbridge, my lady?"
the scout asked. "No." She had not dared. With Renly dead, Catelyn had been uncertain of the reception she might receive from his young widow and her protectors. Instead, she had ridden through the heart of the war, through fertile riverlands turned to blackened desert by the fury of the Lannisters, and each night her scouts brought back tales that made her ill. "Lord Renly is slain," she added.
"We hope that tale was some Lannister lie or..."
"Would that it were. My brother commands in River Run?"
"Yes, my lady. His grace left Sir Edmure to hold River Run and guard his rear."
"Gods grant him the strength to do so," Catelyn thought, "and the wisdom as well. Is there word from Rob in the west?"
"You've not heard?" The man seemed surprised. "His grace won a great victory at Oxcross. Sir Stafford Lannister is dead, his hosts scattered."
Sir Wendell Manderley gave a whoop of pleasure, but Catelyn only nodded. Tomorrow's trials concerned her more than yesterday's triumphs. Martin Rivers had made his camp in the shell of a shattered holdfast, beside a roofless stable and 100 fresh graves. He went to one knee when Catelyn dismounted.
"Well met, my lady. Your brother charges to keep an eye out for your party, and has called you back to River Run in all haste should we come upon you."
Catelyn scarce liked the sound of that. "Is it my father?"
"No, my lady. Lord Huster is unchanged."
Rivers was a ruddy man with scant resemblance to his half-brothers.
"It's only that we feared you might chance upon Lannister scouts. Lord Tywin has left Harrenhal and marches west with all his power."
"Rise," she told Rivers, frowning. "Stannis Baratheon would soon be on the march as well. Gods help them all. How long until Lord Tywin is upon us?"
3 days, perhaps four. It's hard to know. We have eyes out along all the roads, but it would be best not to linger."
Nor did they. Rivers broke his camp quickly and saddled up beside her, and they set off again, near 50 strong now, flying beneath the direwolf, the leaping trout, the twin towers. Her men wanted to hear more of Rob's victory at Oxcross, and Rivers obliged.
"There's a singer come to River Run, calls himself Ryman the Rhymer. He's made a song of the fight. Doubtless you will hear it sung tonight, my lady. Wolf in the night, this Raymond calls it. He went on to tell how the remnants of Sir Stafford's host had fallen back on Lannisport. Without siege engines, there was no way to storm Castle Rock, so the young wolf was paying the Lannisters back in kind for the devastation they'd inflicted on the Riverlands. Lords Carstark and Glover were raiding along the coast. Lady Mormont had captured thousands of cattle and was driving them back towards Riverrun, while the Great John had seized the gold mines at Castamere, Nunsdeep, and Pendrick Hills. Sir Wendell laughed.
"Nothing's more like to bring a Lannister running than a threat to his gold."
"How did the king ever take the tooth?" Sir Perwin Frey asked his bastard brother. "That's a hard, strong keep, and it commands the hill road."
"He never took it. He slipped around it in the night. It said the direwolf showed him the way, that grey wind of his. The beast sniffed out a goat track that wound down a defile and up along beneath a ridge. A crooked and stony way, yet wide enough for men riding single file. The Lannisters in their watchtowers got not so much as a glimpse of them."
Rivers lowered his voice.
"There's some say that after the battle, the king cut out Stafford Lannister's heart and fed it to the wolf."
"I would not believe such tales," Catelyn said sharply. "My son is no savage."
"As you say, my lady, still it's no more than the beast deserved. That is no common wolf, that one. The Great John's been heard to say that the old gods of the north sent those dire wolves to your children."
Catelyn remembered the day when her boys had found the pups in the late summer snows. There had been five, three male and two female, for the five true-born children of House Stark, and a sixth, white of fur and red of eye, for Ned's bastard son, John Snow. No common wolves, she thought. No, indeed. That night, as they made their camp, Brienne sought out her tent.
"My lady, you are safely back among your own now, a day's ride from your brother's castle. Give me leave to go."
Catelyn should not have been surprised. The homely young woman had kept to herself all through their journey, spending most of her time with the horses, brushing out their coats and pulling stones from their shoes. She had helped Shad cook and clean game as well, and soon proved that she could hunt as well as any. Any task Catelyn asked her to turn her hand to, Brienne had performed deftly and without complaint. And when she was spoken to, she answered politely, but never chattered, nor wept, nor laughed. She had ridden with them every day, and slept among them every night, without ever truly becoming one of them. It was the same when she was with Renly, Catelyn thought. At the feast, in the melee, even in Renly's pavilion with her brothers of the Rainbow Guard. There are walls around this one higher than Winterfell's. "If you left us, where would you go?" Catelyn asked her.
"Back,"
Brienne said.
"To Storm's End."
"Alone?" It was not a question. The broad face was a pool of still water, giving no hint of what might live in the depths below.
"Yes."
"You mean to kill Stannis?" Brienne closed her thick, calloused fingers around the hilt of her sword. The sword that had been his.
"I swore a vow. Three times I swore. You heard me."
"I did," Catelyn admitted. The girl had kept the rainbow cloak when she discarded the rest of her blood-stained clothing, she knew. Brienne's own things had been left behind during their flight, and she had been forced to clothe herself in odd bits of Sir Wendell's spare garb, since no one else in their party had garments large enough to fit her. "Vows should be kept, I agree, but Stannis has a great host around him, and his own guards sworn to keep him safe."
"I'm not afraid of his guards. I'm as good as any of them. I should never have fled."
"Is that what troubles you, that some fool might call you craven?" she sighed. "Renly's death was no fault of yours. You served him valiantly, but when you seek to follow him into the earth, you serve no one." She stretched out a hand to give what comfort a touch could give. "I know how hard it is." Brienne shook off her hand.
"No one knows. You're wrong.
Catelyn said sharply. Every morning when I wake, I remember that Ned is gone. I have no skill with swords, but that does not mean that I do not dream of riding to King's Landing and wrapping my hands around Cersei Lannister's white throat and squeezing until her face turns black. The beauty raised her eyes, the only part of her that was truly beautiful.
If you dream that, why would you seek to hold me back? Is it because of what Stannis said at the parley?
Was it? Catelyn glanced across the camp. Two men were walking sentry, spears in hand. I was taught that good men must fight evil in this world, and Renly's death was evil beyond all doubt. Yet I was also taught that the guards make kings, not the swords of men. If Stannis is our rightful king, he's not. Robert was never the rightful king either. Even Renly said as much. Jaime Lannister murdered the rightful king after Robert killed his lawful heir on the Trident. Where were the guards then? The guards don't care about men, no more than kings care about peasants.
A good king does care.
Lord Renly, his grace, he would have been the best king, my lady. He was so good, he...
He is gone, Brienne, she said as gently as she could. Stannis and Joffrey remain, and so does my son.
He wouldn't... You'd never make a peace with Stannis, would you? Bend the knee? You wouldn't.
I will tell you true, Brienne. I do not know. My son may be a king, but I am no queen. Only a mother who would keep her children safe, however she could. I'm not meant to be a mother. I need to fight.
Then fight, but for the living, not the dead. Renly's enemies are Rob's enemies as well.
Brienne stared at the ground and shuffled her feet.
I do not know your son, my lady.
She looked up.
I could serve you, if you would have me.
Catelyn was startled.
Why me?
The question seemed to trouble Brienne.
You helped me, in the pavilion, when they thought that I had...
You were innocent.
Even so, you did not have to do that. You could have let them kill me. I was nothing to you.
Perhaps I did not want to be the only one who knew the dark truth of what had happened there, Catelyn thought. Brienne, I have taken many well-born ladies into my service over the years, but never one like you. I am no battle commander.
No, but you have courage. Not battle courage, perhaps, but, I don't know, a kind of woman's courage. And I think when the time comes, you will not try and hold me back. Promise me that, you will not hold me back from Stannis.
Catelyn could still hear Stannis saying that Rob's turn too would come in time. It was like a cold breath on the back of her neck. When the time comes, I will not hold you back. The tall girl knelt awkwardly, unsheathed Renly's long sword, and laid it at her feet.
Then I'm yours, my lady, your liegeman, or whatever you would have me be. I will shield your back and keep your counsel, and give my life for yours, if need be. I swear it by the old gods and the new.
And I vow that you shall always have a place by my hearth, and meat and mead at my table, and pledge to ask no service of you that might bring you into dishonour. I swear it by the old gods and the new. Arise. As she clasped the other woman's hands between her own, Catelyn could not help but smile. How many times did I watch Ned accept a man's oath of service? She wondered what he would think if he could see her now. They forded the Red Fork late the next day, upstream of River Run, where the river made a wide loop and the waters grew muddy and shallow. The crossing was guarded by a mixed force of archers and pikemen wearing the eagle badge of the Malisters. When they saw Catelyn's banners, they emerged from behind their sharpened stakes and sent a man over from the far bank to lead her party across. "Slow and careful, like, my lady," he warned, as he took the bridle of her horse. "We've planted iron spikes onto the water, you see, and there's caltrops scattered under them rocks there. It's the same on all the fords, by your brother's command."
Ed Muir thinks to fight here? The realization gave her a queasy feeling in the bowels, but she held her tongue. Between the Red Fork and the Tumblestone, they joined a stream of small folk making for the safety of River Run. Some were driving animals before them, others pulling wains, but they made way as Catelyn rode past and cheered her with cries of "Tully!" or "Stark!" Half a mile from the castle, she passed through a large encampment where the scarlet banner of the Blackwoods waved above the Lord's tent. Lucas took his leave of her there to seek out his father, Lord Titus. The rest rode on. Catelyn spied a second camp strung out along the bank north of the Tumblestone, familiar standards flapping in the wind. Mark Piper's Dancing Maiden, Derry's Ploughman, the twining red and white snakes of the pages, they were all her father's bannermen, lords of the Trident. Most had left River Run before she had to defend their own lands. If they were here again, it could only mean that Ed Muir had called them back. "God save us, it's true. He means to offer battle to Lord Tywin." Something dark was dangling against the walls of River Run, Catelyn saw from a distance. When she rode close, she saw dead men hanging from the battlements, slumped at the ends of long ropes with hempen nooses tight around their necks, their faces swollen and black. The crows had been at them, but their crimson cloaks still showed bright against the sandstone walls.
"They've hanged some Lannisters," Hal Mullen observed. "A pretty sight,"
Sir Wendell Manderley said cheerfully.
"Our friends have begun without us," Perwin Frey jested.
The others laughed, all but Brian, who gazed up at the row of bodies unblinking, and neither spoke nor smiled.
"If they have slain the Kingslayer, then my daughters are dead as well."
Catelyn spurred her horse to a canter. Hal Mullen and Robin Flint raced past at a gallop, hallooing to the gatehouse. The guards on the walls had doubtless spied her banner some time ago, for the portcullis was up as they approached. Ed Muir rode out from the castle to meet her, surrounded by three of her father's sworn men. Great-bellied Sir Desmond Grell, the master-at-arms, authorized Wayne, the steward, and Sir Robin Ryger, River Run's big, bald captain of guards. They were all three of an age with Lord Huster, men who had spent their lives in her father's service. Old men, Catelyn realized. Ed Muir wore a blue and red cloak over a tunic embroidered with silver fish. From the look of him, he had not shaved since she rode south. His beard was a fiery bush.
"Cat, it's good to have you safely back. When we heard of Renly's death, we feared for your life, and Lord Tywin is on the march as well."
"So I am told. How fares our father?"
"One day he seems stronger, the next." He shook his head. "He's asked for you. I did not know what to tell him."
"I will go to him soon," she vowed. "Has there been any word from Storm's End since Renly died, or from Bitterbridge?" No ravens came to men on the road, and Catelyn was anxious to know what had happened behind her.
"Nothing from Bitterbridge. From Storm's End, three birds from the Castellan, Sir Courtney Penrose, all carrying the same plea. Stannis has him surrounded by land and sea. He offers his allegiance to whatsoever king will break the siege. He fears for the boy, he says." "What boy would that be, do you know?"
"Edric Storm," Brian told them. "Robert's bastard son."
Ed Muir looked at her curiously.
"Stannis has sworn that the garrison might go free, unharmed, providing they yield the castle within the fortnight and deliver the boy into his hands. But Sir Courtney will not consent."
"He risks all for a base-born boy whose blood is not even his own," Catelyn thought.
"Did you send him an answer?"
Ed Muir shook his head. "Why, when we have neither help nor hope to offer, and Stannis is no enemy of ours."
Sir Robin Ryger spoke.
My lady, can you tell us the manner of Lord Renly's death? The tales we've heard have been queer.
Cat, her brother said, some say you killed Renly. Others claim it was some southern woman. His glance lingered on Brian.
My king was murdered, the girl said quietly, and not by Lady Catelyn. I swear it on my sword, by the gods old and new.
This is Brian of Tarth, the daughter of Lord Selwyn the Evenstar, who served in Renly's Raymo Guard, Catelyn told them. Brian, I am honoured to acquaint you with my brother, Sir Edmure Tully, heir to Riverrun. His steward, Othar Iswain, Sir Robin Rhaegar, and Sir Desmond Grill.
Honoured, said Sir Desmond.
The others echoed him. The girl flushed, embarrassed even at this commonplace courtesy. If Edmure thought her a curious sort of lady, at least he had the grace not to say so.
Brian was with Renly when he was killed, as was I, said Catelyn, but we had no part in his death.
She did not care to speak of the shadow, here in the open, with men all around, so she waved a hand at the bodies. Who are these men you've hanged?
Edmure glanced up uncomfortably.
They came with Sir Cleus when he brought the Queen's answer to our peace offer.
Catelyn was shocked. You killed envoys?
False envoys, Edmure declared. They pledged me their peace and surrendered their weapons, so I allowed them freedom of the castle, and for 3 nights they ate my meat and drank my mead while I talked with Sir Cleus. On the 4th night, they tried to free the Kingslayer.
He pointed up.
That big brute killed 2 guards with naught but those ham hands of his, caught them by the throats and smashed their skulls together, while that skinny lad beside him was opening Lannister's cell with a bit of wire, God's curse him. The one on the end was some sort of damned mummer. He used my own voice to command that the river gate be open. The guardsmen swear to it. Engar and Delp and Lunglu, all 3. If you ask me, the man sounded nothing like me, and yet the oafs were raising the portcullis all the same.
This was the imp's work, Catelyn suspected. It stank of the same sort of cunning he had displayed at the Eyrie. Once she would have named Tyrion the least dangerous of the Lannisters. Now she was not so certain.
How is it you caught them?
As it happened, I was not in the castle. I'd crossed the tumblestone to,
You were whoring, or wenching. Get on with the tale.
Edmure's cheeks flamed as red as his beard.
It was the hour before dawn, and I was only then returning, when Lunglu saw my boat and recognized me. He finally thought to wonder who was standing below, barking commands, and raised a cry.
Tell me the Kingslayer was retaken.
Yes, though not easily. Jamie got hold of a sword, slew Poole Pemford and Sir Desmond's squire Miles, and wounded Delp so badly that Maester Wyman fears he'll soon die as well. It was a bloody mess. At the sound of steel, some of the other red cloaks rushed to join him, bare hand or no. I hang those beside the 4 who freed him, and threw the rest in the dungeons. Jamie, too. We'll have no more escapes from that one. He's down in the dark this time, chained hand and foot, and bolted to the wall.
And Cleos Frey?
He swears he knew naught of the plot. Who can say? The man is half Lannister, half Frey, an all liar. I put him in Jamie's old tower cell.
You say he brought terms?
If you can call them that. You'll like them no more than I did, I promise.
Can we hope for no help from the south, Lady Stark?
Asked Othar Iswain, her father's steward.
This charge of incest. Lord Tywin does not suffer such slights lightly. He will seek to wash the stain from his daughter's name with the blood of her accuser. Lord Stannis must see that. He has no choice but to make common cause with us.
Stannis has made common cause with a power greater and darker.
Let us speak of these matters later. Catelyn trotted over the drawbridge, putting the grisly row of dead Lannisters behind her. Her brother kept pace.
as they rode out into the bustle of River Run's upper bailey, a naked toddler ran in front of the horses. Catelyn jerked her reins hard to avoid him, glancing about in dismay. Hundreds of small folk had been admitted to the castle and allowed to erect crude shelters against the walls. Their children were everywhere underfoot, and the yard teemed with their cows, sheep, and chickens. "Who are all these folk?"
"My people," Edmure answered. "They were afraid."
"Only my sweet brother would crowd all these useless mouths into a castle that might soon be under siege." Catelyn knew that Edmure had a soft heart. Sometimes she thought his head was even softer. She loved him for it, yet still. "Can Rob be reached by Raven?"
"He's in the field, my lady," Sir Desmond replied. "The bird would have no way to find him."
Otherwise Wayne coughed.
"Before he left us, the young king instructed us to send you on to the twins upon your return, Lady Stark. He asked that you learn more of Lord Walder's daughters to help him select his bride when the time comes."
"We'll provide you with fresh mounts and provisions," her brother promised. "You'll want to refresh yourself before—"
"I'll want to stay," Catelyn said, dismounting. She had no intention of leaving River Run and her dying father to pick Rob's wife for him. "Rob wants me safe. I cannot fault him for that. But his pretext is growing threadbare."
"Boy,"
she called, and an urchin from the stables ran out to take the reins of her horse. Edmure swung down from the saddle. He was a head taller than she was, but he would always be her little brother.
"Cat," he said unhappily, "Lord Daywin is coming.
He's making for the west to defend his own lands. If we close our gates and shelter behind the walls, we can watch him pass with safety."
"This is Tully land," Edmure declared. "If Tywin Lannister thinks to cross it unblooded, I mean to teach him a hard lesson."
"The same lesson you taught his son?" Her brother could be as stubborn as River Rock when his pride was touched. But neither of them was likely to forget how Sir Jaime had cut Edmure's host to bloody pieces the last time he had offered battle. "We have nothing to gain, and everything to lose by meeting Lord Tywin in the field," Catelyn said tactfully.
"The yard is not the place to discuss my battle plans."
"As you will. Where shall we go?" Her brother's face darkened. For a moment, she thought he was about to lose his temper with her, but finally he snapped,
"The gods would, if you will insist."
She followed him along a gallery to the Godswood gate. Edmure's anger had always been a sulky, sullen thing. Catelyn was sorry she had wounded him, but the matter was too important for her to concern herself with his pride. When they were alone beneath the trees, Edmure turned to face her. "You do not have the strength to meet the Lannisters in the field," she said bluntly.
"When all my strength is marshalled, I should have 8,000 foot and 3,000 horse, Edmure said,
"which means Lord Tywin will have near twice your numbers."
"Rob's won his battles against worse odds," Edmure replied, "and I have a plan. You've forgotten Roose Bolton. Lord Tywin defeated him on the Green Fork, but failed to pursue. When Lord Tywin went to Harrenhal, Bolton took the Ruby Ford and the Crossroads. He has 10,000 men. I've sent word to Helman Tallheart to join him with the garrison Rob left at the Twins."
"Edmure, Rob left those men to hold the Twins and make certain Lord Walder keeps faith with us."
"He has," Edmure said stubbornly. "The Freys fought bravely in the Whispering Wood, and also Stevron died at Oxcross, we hear. Sir Raymond and Blackwalder and the rest are with Rob in the west. Martin has been of great service scouting, and Sir Perwin helped see you safe to Renly. Gods be good, how much more can we ask of them? Rob's betrothed to one of Lord Walder's daughters, and Roose Bolton wed another, I hear. And haven't you taken two of his grandsons to be fostered at Winterfell?"
"A ward can easily become a hostage if need be."
She had not known that Lord Stevron was dead, nor of Bolton's marriage.
If we're two hostages to the good, all the more reason Lord Walder dare not play us false. Bolton needs Frey's men, and Sir Helman's as well. I've commanded him to retake Harrenhal.
That's like to be a bloody business.
Yes, but once the castle falls, Lord Tywin will have no safe retreat. My own levies will defend the fords of Red Fork against his crossing. If he attacks across the river, he'll end as Rhaegar did when he tried to cross the Trident. If he holds back, he'll be caught between River Run and Harrenhal. And when Rob returns from the west, we can finish him for good and all.
Her brother's voice was full of brusque confidence, but Catelyn found herself wishing that Rob had not taken her uncle Brynden west with him. The Blackfish was a veteran of half a hundred battles. Edmure was a veteran of one, and that one lost.
"The plan's a good one," he concluded. "Lord Titus says so, and Lord Jonas as well. When did Blackwood and Bracken agree about anything that was not certain, I ask you?"
Be that as it may, she was suddenly weary. Perhaps she was wrong to oppose him. Perhaps it was a splendid plan, and her misgivings only a woman's fears. She wished Ned were here, her Uncle Brynden, or... Have you asked Father about this?
Father is in no state to weigh strategies. 2 days ago, he was making plans for your marriage to Brandon Stark. Go see him yourself, if you do not believe me. This plan will work, Cat. You'll see.
I hope so, Edmure. I truly do. She kissed him on the cheek to let him know she meant it, and went to find her father. Lord Hustertully was much as she had left him, abed, haggard, flesh pale and clammy. The room smelled of sickness, a cloying odour made up in equal parts of stale sweat and medicine. When she pulled back the drapes, her father gave a low moan, and his eyes fluttered open. He stared at her as if he could not comprehend who she was or what she wanted. "Father," she kissed him, "I am returned." He seemed to know her then.
"You've come,"
he whispered faintly, lips barely moving. "Yes," she said. "Rob sent me south, but I hurried back."
"South? Where? Is the Aerie south, sweetling? I don't recall. Oh, dear heart, I was afraid. Have you forgiven me, child?"
Tears ran down his cheeks. "You've done nothing that needs forgiveness, Father." She stroked his limp white hair and felt his brow. The fever still burned him from within, despite all the maester's potions.
"It was best,"
her father whispered.
"John's a good man, good, strong, kind. Take care of you, he will, and well-born. Listen to me, you must. I'm your father, your father. You'll wed when Cat does. Yes, you will."
"He thinks I'm Lysa," Catelyn realized. "Gods be good, he talks as if we were not married yet." Her father's hands clutched at hers, fluttering like two frightened white birds.
"That stripling, wretched boy, not speak that name to me. Your duty, your mother, she was..."
Lord Hustock cried as a spasm of pain washed over him.
"Oh, God, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me, my medicine."
And then Maester Vyman was there, holding a cup to his lips. Lord Huster sucked at the thick white potion as eagerly as a babe at the breast, and Catelyn could see peace settle over him once more. "You'll sleep now, my lady," the maester said when the cup was empty. The milk of the poppy had left a thick white film around her father's mouth. Maester Wyman wiped it away with a sleeve. Catelyn could watch no more. Huster Tully had been a strong man, and proud. It hurt her to see him reduced to this. She went out to the terrace. The yard below was crowded with refugees and chaotic with their noises, but beyond the walls the rivers flowed clean and pure and endless. Those are his rivers, and soon he will return to them for his last voyage. Maester Wyman had followed her out. "My lady," he said softly, "I cannot keep the end bay much longer. We ought to send a rider after his brother. Sir Brynden would wish to be here." "Yes," Catelyn said, her voice thick with grief. "And the Lady Lysa as well, perhaps?" "Lysa will not come." "If you wrote her yourself, perhaps?"
"I will put some words to paper, if that please you."
She wondered who Lysa's wretched stripling had been. Some young squire or hedge knight, like as not. Though by the vehemence with which Lord Huster had opposed him, he might have been a tradesman's son or base-born apprentice, even a singer. Lysa had always been too fond of singers. I must not blame her. John Aaron was 20 years older than our father, however noble. The tower her brother had set aside for her use was the very same that she and Lysa had shared as maids. It would feel good to sleep on a feather bed again, with a warm fire in the hearth. When she was rested, the world would seem less bleak. But outside her chambers she found Uthryde's wain waiting with 2 women clad in grey, their faces cowled, save for their eyes. Catelyn knew at once why they were here.
"Ned?"
The sisters lowered their gaze. Uthryde said, "Sir Cleos brought him from King's Landing, my lady." "Take me to him," she commanded. They had laid him out on a trestle table and covered him with a banner, the white banner of House Stark, with its grey direwolf sigil. "I would look on him," Catelyn said. "Only the bones remain, milady." "I would look on him," she repeated. One of the silent sisters turned down the banner.
"Bones," Catelyn thought. "This is not Ned. This is not the man I loved, the father of my children."
His hands were clasped together over his chest. Skeletal fingers curled about the hilt of some longsword. But they were not Ned's hands, so strong and full of life. They had dressed the bones in Ned's surcoat, the fine white velvet with the direwolf badge over the heart. But nothing remained of the warm flesh that had pillowed her head so many nights, the arms that had held her. The head had been rejoined to the body with fine silver wire, but one skull looks much like another, and in those empty hollows she found no trace of her lord's dark grey eyes, eyes that could be as soft as a fog or hard as stone. "They gave his eyes to crows," she remembered. Catelyn turned away. "That is not his sword."
"Ice was not returned to us, my lady," Uthryde said. "Only Lord Eddard's bones."
"I suppose I must thank the queen for even that much."
"Thank the imp, my lady. It was his doing."
"One day I will thank them all."
"I am grateful for your service, sisters," Catelyn said, "but I must lay another task upon you. Lord Eddard was a Stark, and his bones must be laid to rest beneath Winterfell.
They will make a statue of him, a stone likeness, that will sit in the dark with a direwolf at his feet and a sword across his knees.
Make certain his sisters have fresh horses and aught else they need for the journey," she told Uthryde's wain. "Hal Mullen will escort them back to Winterfell. It is his place as captain of guards. She gazed down at the bones that were all that remained of her lord and love. Now leave me, all of you. I would be alone with Ned tonight. The women in grey bowed their heads. The Silent Sisters do not speak to the living, Catelyn remembered dully. But some say they can talk to the dead. And how she envied that.
Circe. Grandmaster Pycelle had been old for as long as she had known him, but he seemed to have aged another 100 years in the past 3 nights. It took him an eternity to bend his creaky knee before her, and once he had, he could not rise again until Sir Osmond jerked him to his feet. Circe studied him with displeasure. "Lord Kyburn informs me that Lord Giles has coughed his last. Yes, Your Grace, I did my best to ease his passing." "Did you?" The Queen turned to Lady Merryweather. "I did say I wanted Rosby alive, did I not?"
"You did, Your Grace."
"Sir Osmond, what is your recollection of the conversation?" "You commanded Grand Maester Pycelle to save the man, Your Grace. We all heard." Pycelle's mouth opened and closed. "Your Grace must know. I did all that could be done for the poor man. As you did for Joffrey. And his father, my own beloved husband. Robert was as strong as any man in the Seven Kingdoms, yet you lost him to a boar. Oh, and let us not forget John Arryn. No doubt you would have killed Ned Stark as well if I had let you keep him longer. Tell me, Maester, was it at the Citadel that you learned to wring your hands and make excuses?" Her voice made the old man flinch. "No man could have done more, Your Grace. I have always given leal service. When you counselled King Ares to open his gates as my father's host approached, was that your notion of leal service?" "That, I misjudged thee. Was that good counsel? Your Grace must surely know. What I know is that when my son was poisoned, you proved to be of less use than Moon Boy. What I know is that the crown has desperate need of gold, and our Lord Treasurer is dead." The old fool seized upon that. I shall draw up a list of men suitable to take Lord Giles's place upon the council." "A list?" Circe was amused by his presumption. "I can well imagine the sort of list you would provide me. Greybeards and grasping fools and Garth the Gross." Her lips tightened. "You have been much in Lady Marjorie's company of late?" "Yes, yes, I. Queen Marjorie has been most distraught about Sir Loras. I provide her grace with sleeping draughts and other sorts of potions." "No doubt. Tell me, was it our little queen who commanded you to kill Lord Giles?" "Kill?" Grand Maester Pycelle's eyes grew as big as boiled eggs. "Your Grace cannot believe it. It was his cough, by all the gods. Her Grace would not. She bore Lord Giles no ill will. Why would Queen Marjorie want him dead? Why to plant another rose on Tommen's council? Are you blind or bought? Rosby stood in her way, so she put him in his grave. With your connivance." "Your Grace, I swear to you, Lord Giles perished from his cough." His mouth was quivering. "My loyalty has always been to the crown, to the realm, to House Lannister." "In that order?" Pycelle's fear was palpable. "He is ripe enough. Time to squeeze the fruit and taste the juice. If you are as leal as you claim, why are you lying to me? Do not trouble to deny it. You began to dance attendance on Maid Marjorie before Sir Loras went to Dragonstone. So spare me further fables about how you want only to console our good daughter in her grief. What brings you to the maiden vault so often? Not Marjorie's vapid conversation, surely. Are you courting that pox-faced scepter of hers? Diddling little Lady Bulwer? Do you play the spy for her, informing on me to serve her plots?"
I obey. A maester takes an oath of service.
A grand maester swears to serve the realm.
Your Grace, she is the queen.
I am the queen.
I meant, she's the king's wife, and...
I know who she is. What I want to know is why she has need of you. Is my good daughter unwell? Unwell? The old man plucked at the thing he called a beard, that patched growth of thin white hair sprouting from the loose pink wattles under his chin. Not unwell, Your Grace, not as such. My oaths forbid me to divulge. Your oaths will be of small comfort in the black cells, she warned him. I'll hear the truth, or you'll wear chains. Picel collapsed to his knees. I beg you. I was your lord father's man, and a friend to you in the matter of Lord Arryn. I could not survive the dungeons, not again. Why does Marjorie send for you? She desires. She...
Say it!
He cringed. Moon tea, he whispered. Moon tea for... I know what moon tea is for. There it is. Very well. Get off those saggy knees and try to remember what it was to be a man. Picel struggled to rise, but took so long about it that she had to tell Osmond Kettleblack to give him another yank. As to Lord Giles, no doubt our father above will judge him justly. He left no children? No children of his body, but there is a ward, not of his blood. Circe dismissed that annoyance with a flick of her hand. Giles knew of our dire need for gold. No doubt he told you of his wish to leave all his lands and wealth to Tommen? Rosby's gold would help refresh their coffers, and Rosby's lands and castle could be bestowed upon one of her own as a reward for leal service. Lord Waters, perhaps. Aurain had been hinting at his need for a seat. His lordship was only an empty honour without one. He had his eye on Dragonstone, Circe knew, but there he aimed too high. Rosby would be more suitable to his birth and station. Lord Giles loved his grace with all his heart, Picel was saying, but his ward will doubtless understand. Once he hears you speak of Lord Giles's dying wish, go and see it done. If it please your grace. Grand Maester Picel almost tripped over his own robes in his haste to leave. Lady Merryweather closed the door behind him. Moon tea, she said as she turned back to the Queen. How foolish of her. Why would she do such a thing? Take such a risk? The little Queen has appetites that Tommen is as yet too young to satisfy. That was always a danger when a grown woman was married to a child, even more so with a widow. She may claim that Renly never touched her, but I will not believe it. Women only drank moon tea for one reason. Maidens had no need for it at all. My son has been betrayed. Marjorie has a lover. That is high treason, punishable by death. She could only hope that Mace Tyrell's prune-faced harridan of a mother lived long enough to see the trial. By insisting that Tommen and Marjorie be wed at once, Lady Olenna had condemned her precious rose to a headsman's sword. Jamie made off with Sir Ilan Payne. I suppose I shall need to find a new king's justice to snick her head off. I'll do it, offered Osmond Kettleblack with an easy grin. Marjorie's got a pretty little neck. A good sharp sword will go right through it. It would, said Tena, but there is a Tyrell army at Storm's End and another at Maidenpool. They have sharp swords as well. I am awash in roses. It was vexing. She still had need of Mace Tyrell, if not his daughter, at least until such time as Stannis is defeated. Then I shan't need any of them. But how could she rid herself of the daughter without losing the father? Treason is treason, she said, but we must have proof, something more substantial than moon tea. If she is proved to be untrue, even her own lord father must condemn her, or her shame becomes his own. Kettleblack chewed on one end of his moustache. We need to catch them during the deed. How? Caiban has eyes on her day and night. Her serving men take my coin, but bring us only trifles. Yet no one has seen this lover. The ears outside her door hear singing, laughter, gossip. Nothing of any use. Marjorie is too shrewd to be caught so easily, said Lady Merryweather. Her women are her castle walls. They sleep with her, dress her, pray with her, read with her, sew with her.
When she is not hawking or riding, she is playing Come Into My Castle with little Alison Bulwer. Whenever men are about, her scepter will be with her, or her cousins. She must rid herself of her hens sometime, the queen insisted. A thought struck her, unless her ladies are part of it as well. Not all of them, perhaps, but some. The cousins? Even Tana sounded doubtful. All three are younger than the little queen, and more innocent. Wantons clad in maiden's white, that only makes their sins more shocking. Their names will live in shame. Suddenly the queen could almost taste it. Tana, your lord husband is my justiciar. The two of you must sup with me this very night. She wanted this done quickly before Marjorie took it in her little head to return to Highgarden, or sail to Dragonstone to be with her wounded brother at death's door. I shall command the cooks to roast a boar for us, and of course we must have some music to help with our digestion. Tana was very quick. Music. Just so. Go and tell your lord husband, and make arrangements for the singer, Circe urged. Sir Osmond, you may remain. We have much and more to discuss. I shall have need of Kyburn, too. Sad to say, the kitchens proved to have no wild boar on hand, and there was not time enough to send out hunters. Instead, the cooks butchered one of the castle sows and served them ham studded with cloves and basted with honey and dried cherries. It was not what Circe wanted, but she made do. Afterward, they had baked apples with a sharp white cheese. Lady Tana savored every bite. Not so Orton Merriweather, whose round face remained blotched and pale from broth to cheese. He drank heavily and kept stealing glances at the singer. A great pity about Lord Giles, Circe said at last. I dare say none of us will miss his coughing, though. No, I'd think not. We shall have need of a new Lord Treasurer. If the Vale were not so unsettled, I would bring back Peter Baelish, but I am minded to try Sir Harry's in the office. He can do no worse than Giles, and at least he does not cough. Sir Harry's is the king's hand, said Tana. Sir Harry's is a hostage, and feeble even at that. It is time that Tommen had a more forceful hand. Lord Orton lifted his gaze from his wine cup. Forceful? To be sure. He hesitated. Who? You, my lord. It is in your blood. Your grandsire took my own father's place as hand to Aerys. Replacing Tywin Lannister with Owen Merriweather had proved to be akin to replacing a destrier with a donkey, to be sure, but Owen had been an old dun man when Aerys raised him, amiable if ineffectual. His grandson was younger and, well, he has a strong wife. It was a pity Tana could not serve as hand. She was thrice the man her husband was, and far more amusing. She was also Meerish born and female, however, so Orton must needs suffice. I have no doubt that you are more able than Sir Harry's. The contents of my chamber pot are more able than Sir Harry's. Will you consent to serve?
Yes, of course.
Your grace does me great honour. A greater one than you deserve. You have served me ably as justiciar, my lord, and will continue to do so through these trying times ahead. When she saw that Merriweather had grasped her meaning, the queen turned to smile at the singer. And you must be rewarded as well, for all the sweet songs you have played for us whilst we ate. The gods have given you a gift. The singer bowed. Your grace is kind to say so. Not kind, said Circe, merely truthful. Tana tells me that you are called the Blue Bard.
I am, your grace.
The singer's boots were supple blue calfskin, his breeches fine blue wool. The tunic he wore was pale blue silk slashed with shiny blue satin. He had even gone so far as to dye his hair blue in the Tairoshi fashion. Long and curly it fell to his shoulders and smelled as if it had been washed in rose water. From blue roses, no doubt. At least his teeth are white. They were good teeth, not the least bit crooked. You have no other name. A hint of pink suffused his cheeks. As a boy, I was called Wat, a fine name for a ploughboy, less fitting for a singer. The Blue Bard's eyes were the same colour as Robert's. For that alone, she hated him. It's easy to see why you are Lady Marjorie's favourite. Her grace is kind. She says I give her pleasure. Oh, I'm certain of it. Might I see your lute? If it please your grace. Beneath the courtesy there was a faint hint of unease, but he handed her the lute all the same. One does not refuse the queen's request. Circe plucked a string and smiled at the sound. Sweet and sad as love. Tell me, what? The first time you took Marjorie to bed, was that before she wed my son or after? For a moment he did not seem to understand. When he did, his eyes grew large. Your grace has been misinformed. I swear to you, I never... Liar! Circe smashed the lute across the singer's face so hard, the painted wood exploded into shards and splinters. Lord Orton, summon my guards and take this creature to the dungeons. Orton Merriweather's face was damp with fear. This... Oh, infamy! He dared seduce the queen! I fear it was the other way around, but he is a traitor all the same. Let him sing for Lord Kyburn. The Blue Bard went white. No. Blood dripped from his lip, where the lute had torn it. I never... When Merriweather seized him by the arm, he screamed, Mother, have mercy! No! I am not your mother, Circe told him. Even in the black cells, all they got from him were denials, prayers, and pleas for mercy. Before long, blood was streaming down his chin from all his broken teeth, and he wet his dark blue breeches three times over, yet still the man persisted in his lies. Is it possible we have the wrong singer? Circe asked. All things are possible, your grace. Have no fear. The man will confess before the night is done. Down here in the dungeons, Kyburn wore rough spun wool and a blacksmith's leather apron. To the Blue Bard, he said, I am sorry if the guards were rough with you. Their courtesies are sadly lacking. His voice was kind, solicitous. All we want from you is the truth. I've told you the truth, the singer sobbed. Iron shackles held him hard against the cold stone wall. We know better. Kyburn had a razor in his hand, its edge gleaming faintly in the torchlight. He cut away the Blue Bard's clothing until the man was naked but for his high blue boots. The hair between his legs was brown. Circe was amused to see. Tell us how you pleasured the little queen, she commanded. I never. I sang was all. I sang and played. Her ladies will tell you. They were always with us, her cousins. How many of them did you have carnal knowledge of? None of them. I'm just a singer. Please. Kyburn said, Your Grace, mayhaps this poor man only played for Marjorie whilst she entertained other lovers. No, please. She never. I sang. I only sang. Lord Kyburn ran a hand up the Blue Bard's chest. Does she take your nipples in her mouth during your love play? He took one between his thumb and forefinger and twisted. Some men enjoy that. Their nipples are as sensitive as a woman's. The razor flashed. The singer shrieked. On his chest, a wet red eye wept blood. Circe felt ill. Part of her wanted to close her eyes, to turn away, to make it stop. But she was the queen, and this was treason. Lord Tywin would not have turned away. In the end, the Blue Bard told them his whole life back to his first name day. His father had been a chandler, and Wat was raised to that trade. But as a boy, he found he had more skill at making lutes than barrels. When he was 12, he ran off to join a troupe of musicians he had heard performing at a fair. He had wandered half the reach before coming to King's Landing in hopes of finding favor at court. Favor? Kyburn chuckled. Is that what women call it now? I fear you found too much of it, my friend, and from the wrong queen. The true one stands before you. Yes. Circe blamed Marjorie Tyrell for this. If not for her, Wat might have lived a long and fruitful life, singing his little songs and bedding pig girls and crofters' daughters. Her scheming forced this on me. She has soiled me with her treachery. By dawn, the singer's high blue boots were full of blood, and he had told them how Marjorie would fondle herself as she watched her cousins pleasuring him with their mouths. At other times he would sing for her whilst she sated her lusts with other lovers. Who were they?